Good morning, this is Digital Dave, and today is a correction day.
It is a correction day. Jay is filling in for a fast Eddie this morning.
Just
plain Jay.
He just identifies as Jay.
I have been known to be called JJ the Jet Plane around here.
That might fit. That might fit. And we have a bunch of people from NASA.
NASA. Ready?
NASA. Good.
As the other person on the other side of the board, when that usually happens, it feels a little weird.
Redundant,
the side.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for being here this morning.
Yes, it's a pleasure being here.
So we are joined by Rob Herner and
Patrick Morris.
Patrick Morris, thank you for coming in. What is your official title at NASA?
So I'll go first.
Go ahead, Rob.
So I work with the Exploration Ground Systems Program under the Artemis umbrella. My title is a ground ops manager for landing and recovery.
Okay. That sounds highly important.
Are we talking earthbound here or moonbound? I mean, what are we talking, ground?
So my job is solely what we're doing here on planet Earth.
Okay,
But all in an effort to get back to the moon.
Right.
Yeah. Patrick?
Yeah, and first of all, nice to meet you all. Digital Dave and I guess Jay. Plain Jay.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if those are call signs
A-N-E
or...
No, Jay is my real name.
Oh, that's great. Patrick Morris. I work on the Orion spacecraft at a Johnson Space Center in Houston. My role specifically is in the Vehicle Integration Office, what we call in the Orion program. I do system engineering. I lead a team that helps write the requirements for our Exploration Ground Systems team to follow out on the ground at Kennedy, so that way they know how to properly load up the spacecraft full of its prop and its fuel, its hopper galls, its consumables that the crew will use in orbit for oxygen and water and get ready for launch. And then also in the mission evaluation room during the mission. So anytime you hear...
Sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
In other words, the instructions say put gas in it, put water in it, you know. Is the capsule iterating with each flight?
Yes, absolutely so. So Artemis 1 was a test flight that we launched back in 2022, and then Artemis 2 was another test flight to test out all of our environmental control systems with the crew in space doing a lunar flyby. And Artemis 3 will be another iteration of the vehicle where we'll have a docking system on board, and we'll be testing out our docking capabilities and interoperability with our lunar landers.
Okay, so you're talking major differences, not just, well, hey, this didn't work so well, we'll change it a little bit.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
wow.
Big differences for landing on the moon.
So every crew, like Apollo, is training for their own unique vehicle. There won't be a standard, like, here, go fly the Orion, kid, you know?
Eventually we want to get there to where it is, a very similar vehicle time and time again, but since we're in these kind of test phases with these flights, especially with these new components coming on board, so that way we are testing and doing each flight iteratively, so that way we're confident once we land humans on the moon.
And this Artemis 3, again, is not actually leaving Earth orbit.
That is correct. Artemis 3 is not leaving Earth orbit, but it's going to be a very exciting mission.
Yeah.
Right? We're going to be launching three of the biggest rockets that humans have ever built with the SLS rocket launching Orion.
Right.
We got the Blue Origin rockets going to be launching their lunar lander and SpaceX launching their lander as well. And we'll be rendezvousing and testing out our interoperability with both those landers and testing out that docking system I mentioned earlier, so that way we can confidently send crew on Artemis 4.
Okay. Now, it's not going to be a race like SpaceX versus Blue Origin. Who's going to get there first?
In order for us to be successful, we need both of them to be successful for us to be successful.
But you're going to schedule like different days. How many days in orbit are you planning for Artemis 3?
So the way the choreography works, and it will be a choreography, right? It's going to be Blue Origin is launching first, and then we will launch, Orion will launch on the SLS rocket. We'll dock with Blue Origin. It's looking like maybe about a day, and then SpaceX will launch. We'll undock after we do some testing, dock with SpaceX, and then return humans back to Earth safely.
Okay.
So we're looking at, you know, a multi-day mission where we're trying to figure out the mission profile exactly.
Okay, so you're going to order something from Amazon, tell them to deliver it to Artemis 3?
So, Rob, I have a question for you.
Sure, yeah.
It was mentioned the reiteration of all these different capsules and how it kind of changes with each mission. How does that affect your job in the recovery aspect of it? What does that change for you?
So on the recovery side, fortunately, that doesn't really change much for us. The one way it might affect it is the reentry profile for the capsule. From Artemis 1 to Artemis 2, we had the same heat shield, and we changed the entry profile a little bit on that. We had more of a skip reentry for Artemis 1, and we went to a not completely ballistic, but a little bit more of a glide entry for Artemis 2, and we got a lot better performance out of that heat shield, and we got really close to California, off the coast of California, where we partner with the Navy and the U.S. Air Force to retrieve that capsule. And then transitioning over to Artemis 3 is the crew module, which is the only piece coming back that we recover in addition to the crew. You know, that's going to have an upgraded heat shield, and hopefully that just gives us better availability in locations that we can splash down based on its available trajectories.
So you say upgraded, you mean like thicker, so it can take more heat longer or higher temperatures? Or
I'm actually not familiar with those details, Patrick, you know?
So I don't work exactly the heat shield, but it is a new heat shield design for Artemis 3 and beyond. Artemis 2 had the same heat shield design as Artemis 1, where we found some of the concerns. So we, like Rob said, we adjusted our reentry path for the Artemis 2 mission, just to be on the safe side. And Artemis 3 will have a different heat shield design than the previous two missions.
I'm confused as why you guys don't use the heat tiles that you developed for the shuttle program. Is it just too expensive, too difficult to slap on there?
Different objectives, right?
Okay.
So different objectives require different designs. We're coming in, like Rob said, almost ballistically.
Right.
You know, extremely fast coming in from the moon versus space shuttle that was coming in from low Earth orbit.
Oh, really? So you don't think the tiles could handle that type of a reentry?
They definitely need...
they need work, he's saying.
Well, they don't need work. It's just different heat shield designs,
okay.
Right? Different, totally different objectives
right,
for those two,
right.
Those two missions
and
those two
single
vehicles.
Use, so, yeah.
Yep, so the Orion capsule came back from around the moon. For Artemis 2 going in excess of 25,000 miles an hour, heating the heat shield up above 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit, where the space shuttle was, you know, in low Earth orbit, maybe around 17,000 miles an hour. So,
well, that's intriguing, because I always would have thought that... As they came back to Earth, they would slow to an orbital velocity and then re-enter.
No, that's a great question. Yeah, so they do kind of come right in, more or less. That would cost a little bit of propellant to get you to slow down to put you back in a proper orbit around Earth,
okay.
Rather than just kind of coming right in.
So you got to get all the math right, because you're only coming in one time, and it better be landing in where you think you're landing.
Yeah,
right,
yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And we were, to almost, within seconds of accuracy of when we predicted we'd land, and, right in our sweet spot, just, about 50 miles off the shore of California. So,
and between our two programs, it's the choreography and partnership between the Orion program and the EGS program, so that way we are clearly communicating with each other during the mission on where we're going to be landing, so that way Rob and his team can get close enough so that way they can recover the crew fast.
Explain orbital docking, because everybody, Hollywood, they go whoosh, click, and we watch NASA, they're like, okay, it's been an hour, they've moved 3 feet. Why is it so slow?
So they want to make sure that they dock accurately, right? And they're two massive vehicles. These are very, very complicated machines, so they need to come together. They don't want to come together too fast, and these docking systems are also very complicated, and we want to make sure we do things safely all the time.
Well, the thing I'm getting at is you can't just fly up to something in orbit.
Right.
Because you're actually traveling in a circular path.
Exactly, yeah.
So if you accelerate, you actually raise your orbit?
Yeah.
So that's got to be weird.
Yeah, it's a interesting choreography of calculus for orbital mechanics, where you got to meet up with the spacecraft of another vehicle that's also in orbit.
You got to hit a bullet with a bullet.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. It's a good analogy.
Yeah, carefully. He's got some serious nerds
like
over there, man.
Honestly, I love it. I love when people can nerd about a topic that they're passionate about. What is some of the biggest lessons learned from Artemis 2 that you're bringing forward in Artemis 3? What can you share?
Better toilets.
Leave them alone. They fixed it.
On the ground system side, without getting into too much detail, from Artemis 1 to Artemis 2, we had about a 3 month, gap in between those missions. Artemis 1 was our first flight of that vehicle, so we had a lot to figure out. And Artemis 2, second flight, a little bit shorter time. Because we're continually learning better processes on the ground. And moving on to Artemis 3 and beyond, we want to shorten those processing timelines for assembly of all the components on the ground and launch down to about a year, with a goal cadence of about 10 months between every launch, moving past that. So, and that's all in an effort to, get more astronauts up around the moon, send, you know, get payloads out there so we can, you know, this is a little bit beyond Artemis 3, but to build out a moon base and really have a sustained presence there. So an improved, you know, schedule in processing timelines on the ground is really what's been improving for us going to the next mission.
I'm sure you get asked this question a bunch of times. Why not a reusable booster? Is it just because you don't want to spend the time to develop it, or what?
Yeah, so there's a few things in there. You know, we're reusing heritage shuttle hardware, so maybe not the exact hardware. Well, some of the exact hardware in the case of some of the RS-25 engines. But really, it comes down to it's all a trade of designs. You know, if we want to fly something that's reusable, that's going to be a little bit more robust. It has to survive multiple launches, reentries, and that extra weight costs fuel, and now you go down the spiral of the rocket equation. You know, the rocket's getting bigger and bigger to make that happen. So, with the vehicle that we have now, although it's a single-use rocket, you know, in one shot we can put four astronauts back around the moon. Where, you know, the landers that we have with SpaceX and Blue Origin, those are amazing vehicles. Those companies are innovating at levels that are you know, kind of unprecedented. But they'll need multiple refillings of their propellant in order to move on to the moon. So with our system, we're able to keep it light and keep it high performing so that we can get to the moon in one shot.
Okay, that makes sense. You know, you look at SpaceX and Blue Origin and you just think it's amazing what you can do when money is not a problem.
Yeah, they're a very hardware rich company when it comes to development.
Yeah.
So if people wanted to find out more information about upcoming Artemis missions and all the finer details and nerd out with you guys, what's the best way to kind of follow what you guys are doing on the program?
Yeah, I mean, NASA.gov. I mean, we're go look that up, and we are always posting stuff about Artemis and everything that we're doing in the agency, not just Artemis, that helps us get to the moon and try to get there sustainably.
Yeah, NASA.gov and its social media, you know, Instagram, X, our administrators are pretty vocal and very transparent with the public there, so likes to keep people informed.
Perfect. Well, Rob, Patrick, thank you for coming by and talking with us today. We look forward to seeing three.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Likewise, really appreciate it. Can't do what we do without y'all, so greatly appreciate it from everyone online. And
come on
and
back anytime.
Yeah,
it's been great to see all the public support here out of EAA.
Yeah, so excellent.
Thank you all.
All right, this is Digital Dave.
And I'm Jay, and this is EAA Radio.